Welcome, everybody. If my Timex is working right, we are at 10:30. Welcome you all to When Adult Children Move Back Home. And we have two outstanding speakers today, who Mr. Deborah Cornfield and Rachel, who we know from being on the planning committee for this conference, and know her. And Deborah Cornfield grew up in Guatemala. I'm going to read briefly a little bit of the bio here. As a missionary child, and met her husband David at Wheaton College in Illinois. God gave them four wonderful children who they took to Brazil and who worked as missionaries in One Challenging International from 1990 until present. In 2004, Deborah moved to Pittsburgh due to her daughter's Kara's need for intestinal transplant. Multiple complications required Deborah to stay in Pittsburgh during Kara's care until her death in 2014. David continued to live in Brazil until 2010, when he moved into Pittsburgh to continue travel regularly from the ministry in Brazil and other South American countries. Deborah is an RN, has a graduate degree, and has a family counseling earned in Brazil, and has published books in Portuguese and other areas of support and care of sexual abuse survivors. Since her daughter's death, she has begun to travel with David to South America several times a year for missionary to pastors and pastors' wives, and to train leaders and support groups of abused survivors. Rachel received her master's in social work from the University of Pittsburgh in 2014. She proceeded to become a licensed social worker. Rachel loves walking with people on the journey of self-discovery and continues the healing of positive relationships. She works especially in the areas of grief, stress, anxiety, depressions, and couples counseling. Rachel got her bachelor's degree in sociology with a minor in Christian formation and ministry at Wheaton College. She proceeded to move back to her home for 3 years for a short-term missionary in Brazil. She moved to Pittsburgh in 2010 and started living independently that same year. She currently works with Pittsburgh Pastoral Institute and is a genuine asset for the formation of this conference. So thank you, ladies both.
Thank you. Welcome to all of you. If you didn't pick up a handout, they're on the back row, so you can grab one there.
It'd be interesting to us to know who's in the room today, so I wonder if we can go around and just say your name and profession, starting from the front over here. So we have a variety of clergy, other people who work for churches in a variety of capacities, counselors, and many of us are professionals but also have had the challenge of adult children at home. So, thank you for sharing.
So, Rachel chose the title, Moving In and Moving On, because the idea of adult children coming back home is that they can be strengthened, equipped to move on. Would you agree with that? The point of coming home is not to come home for good. So, we're looking at what ideas we can share with you about the moving on part. But first we're going to look at a few statistics just to capture a little bit of the situation in the United States right now. Debbie Pincus wrote a really helpful article. I'd read a lot of stuff in preparation for today, but this one single article stood out to me above everything else I read as having the most helpful information in one place. So if you want to read one thing, I recommend her article. It's called Adult Children Living at Home. If you Google it, you'll find it, Debbie Pincus. She says 27 is the new 18. She's not making that up. That's a very commonly understood fact in our culture today. A generation ago, if you were 18, you expected to go to college and not to come back home. That's not true anymore. Because, as you'll see in the next slide, 53% of 18 to 24-year-olds reside with parents in our country today. This number has increased steadily over the last 10 years. If you want more specific data on that, I have some numbers here. I just didn't want to take a lot of our time today just looking at statistics. 85% of new college grads come back home at least for a while. 85%. 13% return home after trying to live on their own and not being successful. The largest group living with parents is from the group of young people who never went to college. They just continue living with their parents because they never made that break to go away.
So obviously we all know why young adults move home. They move home because we move home, because I did it. We move home because it's convenient. In other words, we don't want to become independent. And as we can see here, this college person is speaking to a college counselor and says, I want to go out of town so that I can become a fully independent person, but near enough so that I can bring my laundry home. It's convenient. It's comfortable. In other words, we're lazy and clearly don't want to have to work hard. So this person says, you don't know what you've got until you move. And we move home because we can. In other words, we're moochers and irresponsible. And this son says, you're kicking me out? And the father says, no, son, we're releasing you into the wild so that you can fly free. My young eaglet, don't forget to tweet. So clearly I'm being a little ironic here, a little sarcastic. Maybe there's a bigger picture. That's what I hear on the radio. That's what I hear in articles. There's a law out there that says young adults are moving home because we're a lazy generation, because we are not engaged in moving into the world as independent people, because we don't want to work hard. And part of the reason we're doing this as a mother-daughter thing is because clearly there's two perspectives on that. There are many perspectives on that, but we're going to share a little bit of what it's like for a daughter to move home. We're going to share a little bit of what it's like for a mom to have young adult children living at home, and talk a lot about that bigger picture of why a lot of these things happen. Make sure everyone has a handout. I think there's enough for everybody. So this one says, Mom, Dad, I think it's time for me to get out of there and follow everyone else. There's a sheep, you know. And I wanted to bring out that this is a question of identity. That part of the reason that young adult children or young adults move home is because it's more complex in our world today to establish identity than it was a generation ago.
And that's why 27 is the new 18.
Absolutely. So we're going to share a little bit of our own story, and we're going to spend quite a bit of time on that because it's relevant to what we'll talk about later. And then we'll get into more kind of, well, what do we do to help this happen more smoothly, more effectively to deal with this new reality? So this is my family. My mom, Debbie, my dad is David. I am the third. And as you heard already, my older sister, Karis, died in 2014 after living at home for 10 years, approximately, more or less. So that was a part of our story as a family in terms of what it meant for young adults to live at home. But everyone else did too. I did, Val did, Cesar did, Brian never did. My brother Dan never did. He was the only one of us kids who never did. So I actually started living at home in some sense when I was a senior in college during spring break in my last semester, which was quite an accomplishment because my parents lived in Brazil and I lived in Chicago. So I really, really wanted to move home to accomplish that. Actually, what happened was that I had a mental breakdown. I, for a variety of reasons, hit a wall that was so bad that I just stopped functioning. And my mom moved back to the States at that point to help care for me and created a home for me during my last 8 weeks of college.
God was very good to us. we have a supporting church in Wheaton, which is where Rachel was. And they, it was just a God thing. They have a furlough home. And the family who was supposed to occupy that home canceled right at the last minute, exactly when we needed a space off campus to so that I could have Rachel with me. That was just an amazing miracle.
So part of my crisis, was that I had watched my mom over and over again leave home to be with my older sister Karis in hospitals and for surgeries, sometimes here in the States while we were in Brazil. And I needed to know that she was willing to leave home for me. Apparently that's what affects me. Another part of my crisis was I didn't know how to deal with world after college. I had been taught how to be a good high school student. I had excellent grades. I was participating in sports. I did everything a high school student did. I was gone from home from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. most days. I participated in youth activities at church, and none of it taught me what it meant to be an adult. And then I went to college, and I was told liberal arts education is great. Do what you're passionate about. Do what you enjoy. I got a degree in sociology, and none of it prepared me to know what it was like to be an adult. I did internships every summer, every time at a nonprofit ministry, and none of it prepared me to know what it meant to try to find a job after college. So I hit spring break senior year and realized all of a sudden I didn't have a plan. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know how to figure out where to go. I didn't know how to live independently, despite having been prepared in the best education that our country has to offer. I hit a crisis during spring break for family reasons, for emotional reasons, for professional reasons. So the result of that was that in my desperation, I one of the things that happened in my last semester was that I received a brochure from my parents' missions organization saying, be a short-term missionary. And I was like, I can do that. I know how to do that. So I applied, was accepted, raised support for the summer, worked a part-time job for the summer, and moved back to Brazil, where home was for me at the time.
So David and I were at home. Our daughter Valerie had just started school at Notre Dame. Karis had been able to go back to school at Notre Dame after several years out, having two transplants, and I had spent a semester with her helping her readjust to getting back into college. So I had just recently returned to Brazil thinking, okay, we're over the hump, right? And then I got a call from my sister saying, come to the States as fast as you can, Rachel needs you. So I did that, and then we spent the summer in the States and then moved back to Brazil. So Valerie's at college, Karis is back in college, and now Rachel's home with us, which was, for me, a great relief because I did not feel confidence at all that she was stable enough to try to do life on her own yet. She had had a major breakdown just a few months before. And I wasn't convinced that the doctors knew yet what was really going on with her. So for me, it was a great comfort to have her back in my house. Meanwhile, she's trying to prove that she's over that and she can be independent.
Yeah, that went well. So I discovered that one of the challenges of missionary work, at least how it was in our context, was that if you didn't have a vision of what you wanted to do, you were floundering. Everyone who was a missionary in our context had established a ministry of their own, usually from scratch. It didn't exist before. And they were go-getters, and they were initiators, and they knew what they were doing, and they were doing it. And that included my dad, full bore. Like, he knew what he was about. He was about pastoring pastors, and he created an organization from scratch that was reaching hundreds of pastors in Brazil at that point. And it was inconceivable to him that I had no idea what I was trying to do. So I helped out a lot of different people around the edges of a lot of different things, and there was nothing solid about it. There was a little bit here and a little bit there. I had no idea. I created my own schedule for the most part, which was a problem. I wasn't very good at it. But it was sort of working until April 2008.
I got a call from Rick Karras's doctor in South Bend at Notre Dame saying, come as soon as you can. Your daughter's in crisis. And my wife and I, they were Christians. They were friends of our family. They had bent over backwards to help Karras get through college. But they just couldn't do it anymore. It was just had gone past what they could handle. So you may have heard the term boomerang kids. Have you heard that term? You know, that you send them out, but they come back. I've started feeling like I'm a boomerang parent, right? I tried to go home, then I needed to go for Rachel, and then I was home for a little while, and then Karras. So I was the boomerang parent. So now I'm going back to the States to help Karras finish her last semester so that she can graduate. And then we went straight from there to a major surgery in Pittsburgh, and life went on in Pittsburgh from there on.
So what happened for me when my mom moved back was that my sense of home disappeared. So home for us in Brazil was always created by my mom. Without my mom, there was a house that my dad lived in occasionally because he traveled extensively for work. And when he did live there, he didn't know how to function without my mom. He didn't know how to do laundry. He didn't know how to cook. He didn't know how to... So there was this tension between me being the adult daughter who was trying to figure out an identity and what it meant to be adult, and him needing someone to step into my mom's shoes. And so we had a tense relationship for a couple years until it became really clear that he needed to move back to the States full time to be with my full time is relative. He needed to create home in the U.S. And travel from the U.S. instead of from São Paulo, where we lived, because my mom wasn't moving back anytime soon. And at that point, I, so to speak, got kicked out of home, which needed to happen, but I still didn't know how to live on my own. And we'll get into more of why that was later.
So Rachel was in a very insecure place, being at home where she had gone for security, but around her, my husband's secretary came in and started selling everything off and packing it up and giving it away because David had rented our house to a family that was soon to move in, and Rachel had to leave by that date in July because David was moving to the States. And we couldn't afford to maintain everything. By then, we were renting an apartment, and it financially was complicated. So Rachel had a little bit of warning, but she didn't have the finances to live on her own. And so she, as this date approached, things got tense for her.
One thing we'll talk about later is the value of a young adult moving home with a plan. And that was one of the things that was lacking, that if I had moved home with that intentionality and that clarity, I think things would have gone a little bit differently.
So in 2010, David moved to the States. Rachel lived with several families for a little while, and it just didn't work for her. And eventually, I found out she's coming to live with us in the States, right? At the same time, our daughter Valerie graduated from Notre Dame. She went home to Brazil for the summer. She had a boyfriend there. And then she told me, I'm coming back to the States to live with you too, because I want to go to nursing school. She had already graduated from college, but she wanted to go to nursing school. And we had a tiny little two-bedroom apartment. And all of a sudden, Rachel's coming, and Valerie's coming.
And Dad had come to the extent that he comes.
David was in and out. He travels all the time.
Yeah. So there was a little while in which there were 4 to 5 of us, depending if my dad was home, living in this tiny space. And then the apartment upstairs came open, and Valerie and I moved upstairs with no idea how we were going to pay the rent. And thankfully, we started patching jobs together, part-time jobs here or there. And my church hired me for some stuff. They were a lifesaver at that point in my life. I helped with the children's ministry. And then started figuring out other things, but it was all part-time, and none of it had a long-term future.
Meanwhile, all this stress really affected Rachel. She was not stable emotionally, mentally. You remember she had that breakdown when she was a senior? And she's not received proper care while all this time in Brazil. And so when she arrived in the States, she was pretty much a mess, I could say.
Yeah, you could definitely say that. So one of the things that had happened that I haven't mentioned up to this point is that while I was in Brazil, I went through crazy emotional cycles. I would be basically depressed for about 3 months in the summer. And for about 3 months, December to February, I would be like the crazy ideas lady. Like I was going to do all these things. I was going to save the world. I was going to
turn our house into a refuge for abused women.
Which I later discovered my parents were excited about.
She made all these plans and then told us that's what was happening to our house.
So something I, thanks to my mom, came to admit that December after moving to the States was that I wasn't stable emotionally and I needed further help, professional help. We went to actually our PCP, who's a blessed man who has extensive experience with psychiatric conditions. And he said, you've got bipolar. And I was like, no, I don't. And he was like, yes, you do. Let me describe to you the symptoms of bipolar. And I was like, yes, I do. and he got me on meds. And it was over the next maybe 2 months, I felt like I was coming back to myself. I felt like I was coming back to the self I knew in high school. After all of these crazy swings, after all of this instability for a number of reasons, I rediscovered who Rachel was as a stable person. And that was really important.
So, next step was that David and I bought a house. And we moved away, far, far away from Rachel and Valerie, a mile up the hill. But Valerie decided she was coming with us because she didn't have enough money to pay her rent. She was going full-time to an intensive nursing course at Pittsburgh, at University of Pittsburgh. We already had Karis with us all of this time. We haven't commented much about Karis, but she's living with us this whole time, in and out of the hospital, one crisis after another. So that was our reality. This was the end of May 2011 at this point.
Yeah, and I continued to patch together part-time jobs through August 2012. One really core thing that happened between my diagnosis and August 2012 was that I finally figured out a professional direction, which I had been stumbling through all sorts of things for years after college, not knowing what I wanted. And so I finally figured out that what I wanted to be into was emotional and spiritual healing. After all of this journey I had been on, that was what I was passionate about. And so I did my grad program at Pitt I got my master's in social work.
Meanwhile, Karis is having her normal, abnormal roller coaster. Up, down, in, out, surgeries, crises, ICU, near-death experiences, all of that is happening. Valerie was with us for all of half of 2011 and 2012. She got her RN in December of 2011. And then she decided to go visit her boyfriend before starting a job in nursing at Pitt Children's Hospital, which was her dream job. It's what she It's the reason she went to nursing school. She wanted to be a pediatric nurse. That was her passion, her love. And she went to Brazil, we thought, for a week. When she got there, she called and said, Cesar and I got engaged. I'm not coming home. I'm staying here, and we're getting married in November. So she was moved out of the house.
Yeah, I think when we finally do move out, we sometimes make decisions that shock our parents and dismay them quite a bit, and that's part of the process. So I had gained a sense of professional direction. I was starting grad school. Valerie had moved to Brazil and gotten married. So for a while, the only young adult left at home was Karis.
Until Casey moved in. Who's Casey? Casey was a friend of Karis's who was suicidal. She was completely unbalanced. She really needed some security. And so Karis asked us, and we ended up saying yes. So Casey lived with us for almost two years. Another young adult needing security, needing stability, needing a place to figure out some roots so that she could move back out and be independent.
Karis had a habit of collecting people who were in need in one way or another. She saw the lonely person in the room and went and talked to them. And it was a beautiful thing and occasionally an infuriating thing when she wanted all of us involved in people's lives on a level that could get overwhelming.
So Rachel's doing great at this point. Karis is doing very badly. And in January of 2014, Valerie had a month off. She had been unable to practice her profession of nursing in Brazil. She was very unhappy. They would not accept her training here in the States, even though she was at one of the top 10 schools in this country. That's because we don't accept their degrees. We do the same thing to them. So they were like, it's tit for tat. You don't accept us, we don't accept you. If you want to work here as a professional in our country, you need to be trained here. Exactly what we make people do who come from other places. But she was tired of school. She had been through 6 years of school. She wanted, she just couldn't handle going back to school. She had tons of student debt to worry about. So she started teaching English in Brazil. And in January, she came to the States. January's vacation month, so she had some time off. She came to the States. And as it turned out, Karis died the next month in February. So it was God's gracious gift to her to have those few weeks with her sister before she died. So we're grateful for that, but she ended up staying. And Cesar got his green card and came a few months later. And they both lived with us until they were able to find jobs in Pittsburgh, which didn't happen until August of 2014. So at that point, we actually had 7 people living in our home. We had a couple from Brazil who had been a plan in place for a long time that they were going to come live with us to study English. We had Casey. We had Valerie and Cesar. We had David and me. Not exactly an ideal situation for 2 introverts who needed to grieve.
Yeah. Grieving is complicated no matter what, and extra complicated when the person you're grieving has been ill for her whole life up and down, but especially intensely the previous 10 years with multiple near-death experiences. So it's been a thing. So in August 2014, my parents were empty nesters for the first time, sort of.
Sort of, because we didn't have our own kids living at home with us anymore. But we still had this Brazilian couple and we still had Casey. So by December, Casey moved out in October and this couple moved back to Brazil in December. So in December, David and I were actually empty nesters for the first time and have continued to be so.
So it was in August 2014 that I graduated with my master's. I was hired straight out of grad school at the place I did my last year internship, and I got married to Brian that next month. So things were coming together for me. How many years after? 2007? 7 years after having graduated from college? And then Val and I both bought houses the following summer. So I think that was kind of the final line in the sand where we were like, we're fully independent, we're married, we have our professions established, we have houses, and we're taking care of ourselves fully in the adult world at this point.
So at that point, Rachel was independent, Valerie was independent, Karis was independent, she was living in heaven. It had only taken 8 years since Rachel graduated from college.
So that's the story of young adults living at home in our family, until I have children and Valerie has children, and then we'll do it all over again, possibly. as you can see, even in this story, my story, Valerie's story, Karis's story, every young adult story is different. Every parent's story is different. And our story is very unique because of moving back and forth from Brazil, because of Karis having a chronic illness. But there are probably things that you can resonate with in your own stories with adult children. So you can see that differently from those first slides that we looked at, where kids move home because it's convenient, because it's comfortable, because they can. There are elements of all those things. There's truth to all those things. But in our story, we moved home in a quest for stability because of a lack of direction or clarity, because of transition from one living situation to another where we had a few months or a few weeks where we needed that, because of a need for emotional support and community that no longer existed naturally after college, because of mental illness, in my case, because of major health struggles in Karis's case, and at moments because of financial need or need to save money. Why else do young adults move home? I mean, I know that's a pretty extensive list, but why else?
In your experience, what have you noticed as other reasons? Are there others? Did we kind of hit all of them?
We may have covered it. That's a pretty extensive list. But. Any further thoughts? Yeah? Douglas?
Sure.
A lack of confidence. They need to develop further professional skills, for sure. For healing, for like mental healing. Sure.
I totally agree with you. I think that's a huge factor in our story, and it's probably true in other people's stories as well.
So the factor that was just mentioned is trauma, and because of my sister's health situation, I don't think we're the only ones that experience trauma during college. I don't think it takes a health crisis to experience trauma during college. One major thing I've noticed is a lot of parents get divorced as kids move to college. They stay together for the sake of the kids until the kids move to college, and then they're done. That's a trauma. So the sudden loss of home base becomes a huge issue.
So developmentally, we know that 2 and 3 year olds. Are able to start taking steps towards independence to the degree that they have this stable, secure bond with their mother, right? Or with their primary caregiver. And we're kind of cycling back around to another stage of new steps towards independence. And if that stable bond isn't there, it's really harder to have the security to take the scary steps out. And I think that affected all of our kids, without doubt.
Anything else? Something that I didn't put on here, but I mentioned earlier, is a lack of preparation for how to be in the adult world. At least in my life, that was a huge issue. Because despite fulfilling what seemed to be all the expectations of me in high school and college, I was in no way prepared. And if I had been a little bit more proactive, I could have found that, but I wasn't and didn't.
Part of that was the fact that we were moving between cultures and between social realities. So the way you do banking in Brazil is totally different from the way you do banking in the U.S. The way you apply for jobs, the way you do basic functions of life is different there. So our kids had grown up in one system and were transitioning into another. And skills that were assumed for U.S. teenagers when they go to college, our kids didn't have. For example, they did not have driver's licenses. In Brazil, you are not allowed to sit behind a wheel until you're 18 years old, which was the time that our kids were leaving home to come to the States without that kind of rite of passage and practical skill that was assumed and not provided. There was not a way provided for them to do that during college. So just getting their driver's licenses ended up being traumatic for all four of our kids. In fact, Karis never did it.
Traumatic may be a bit extreme, but I was 22 when I finally got my driver's license. That said, I think that people come into college with a variety of preparedness for the world beyond college, variety of preparedness for an adult and professional world. And I think that's an issue as well.
Yeah, I'm not trying to say our situation was unique, but it was had some different quirks to it, different flavor.
So how do we work with children who are considering moving home or who are currently living at home?
So obviously you've understood that our situation was messy, and I have no authority for telling you how to do it right, except that I know we did a lot of things wrong, and we learned from that. Yes? In some ways, I think we did better with Casey, who was not our child, because things were more objective. In some ways, I think she wanted us to be the family she never had, and that got messy. That got really complicated.
So. In the end, I felt a little guilty about how Casey left us, because she was continuing to deal with some serious mental health issues, and she chose to move out. But I knew that in the same situation, my family had stuck with me no matter what. And because she was not blood, we let her go. And we don't have contact with her.
Very sad story. Okay, so hopefully, because of hearing the messiness of ours, maybe you can feel like your situation or your client's situation can be objectively a little bit simpler. I hope that's the case for you. But what I did was go to the experts to find out some tips to give to you. And if somebody had taught me this at the beginning, I think it could have helped us a lot. So these are some basic boundaries issues for the most part. It's just solid, basic, healthy boundaries. That's most of what we're going to talk about. But I wish somebody had been there to tell me these things, to give me a little guidance. And so I hope that these things will be helpful to you. Most of this is taken from the article I already referred to by Debbie Pincus. Okay? So we reorganized it a little bit, but most of the core ideas are from her article. So her main thing is make a plan. Make a plan if you can before your child even moves back home, so that you're not already in it when you decide to set the boundaries, but rather you can figure it out before your child comes back home, that you can sit down together, make a plan together. So the parent's side, you have to decide what is acceptable to you for your child coming back home. It's not going to be the same as when they were 18 or 17.
Quick comments about your handouts. I forgot to mention earlier that we didn't include in your handouts all of the slides related to our personal family story. We just didn't think you needed it. But at this point, we're back on the handouts.
So tips from the experts for parents. The second thing that Debbie recommends is to clarify expectations, because this is a different relationship, and then nurture an adult relationship. It really means probably create and nurture. Because while your child is at college, there are probably still a significant dependency that's never been clarified as a specific plan towards working towards their independence. So make a plan, preferably before your child moves back home. And some of the elements of this plan are to define goals. What are your child's goals? What are the reasons why he or she is coming back? Not coming back just to live because you don't have any other options, but help your child design and specify what their goals are. And are they goals that you can support wholeheartedly? If not, maybe you need to consider whether it's wise for your child to move back home. Because if you're in conflict about the basic purpose for him or her to be there, then it's a setup for tremendous tension between you. How will you both know this is working or not working for them to live at home? What will you do if it isn't working? How will you both know when he or she has reached his or her goals? Agree on a realistic time frame, and from the beginning, make a plan for him or her moving out. If this is all part of the plan and it's done with goodwill from both sides, then you can avoid some shock later on. It doesn't mean that the plan can't be adjusted. It will be adjusted, because you're going into it kind of making your best guess, giving your best shot at what might be possible. But you have something to work from. Right? Does that make sense to you? I wish I had thought of that. And it was my turn. Second, clarify expectations. Your child is not any longer, we're calling him or her a child because he's a parent's child, but he's no longer a child. He's a young adult. And so he needs to be responsible in significant ways. And those responsibilities need to increase over time. Maybe when he or she first comes home, you define three or four basic responsibilities that maybe doesn't include paying rent yet because he doesn't have a job. But as part of your plan, as soon as he or she gets a job, then a percentage of the paycheck will go towards helping with expenses of your home, because he's an adult now. He's not a dependent child. And that gets worked in even from the beginning. What rules or boundaries will you expect him or her to respect, and what will be the consequences if not? Now, this is where it can get tricky, right? With a young adult who's used to being at college and having to be accountable to no one, and all of a sudden, if he's moving back home, there has to be some kind of accountability. It may not be okay for you as a parent to not know where your child is, to not know what time he's coming home, to not know whether he's bringing someone home with him. What about practice of sex? Is that okay with you in your home or not? What about smoking, drinking, drugs? What about being present at meals? All kinds of lifestyle stuff that you, if you can work it through to some degree before your child comes home, everything will be simpler, right?
And I think part of the point here is for the young adult to realize, I think there's a confusion. Because if we grow up in that home, and we return to that home, and we think this is my home. And I think as a young adult, it's important to realize this is my parents' home. This is the home that they have paid for. They have prepared. The space belongs to them. And they are letting me live here. It's a favor to me. And I need to treat this home with the respect that I would treat a home I was a guest in. It's going to be more comfortable than being a guest because I grew up here and because I'm going to be here probably for at least several months. But this is a space I need to treat with respect according to the boundaries that they set.
At the same time, the parent needs to consider what kinds of boundaries are appropriate for a young adult that were not true when they were a child. So there has to be some kind of meeting of the minds on all of these issues. And as parents, we need to respect what belongs to him or her. Rachel said that the child needs to respect what belongs to the parents and define that in a different way. But we also have to define in a different way what belongs to our child, including responsibility for his or her own life. They are not any longer primarily responsible to us, and we are not any longer primarily responsible for them the way we were when they were children. So that can be pretty tricky, right? Like, do you assume that, does the child assume that mom makes all the meals? Well, mom might feel a bit resentful about that, right? So what if I think we did something like Rachel makes dinner two nights a week and it's going to be served at this time? And, you know, things like that. So that the child is starting to assume responsibilities as appropriate to his or her situation. Through all of this, listen to each other with openness and respect. Does that sound easy? No. It's all of these things are so great on paper, right? They're tricky when it's real life. They are tricky. So I think Debbie Pincus was trying to say, more of this you can hammer out, at least an initial plan before the child's actually bringing their suitcases back into your home, the better. Most of us probably sort of land in it the way we did, and it's messy, and it's not clear, and it's not straightforward, and it's not too late to make a plan even then, to sit down and say, hey, you know what, we're having a lot of tension. Let's figure this out. Let's try to put some things down in black and white.
One thing that I needed to learn when I moved home as a young adult was how much work it takes to maintain a house, to clean a house, to cook, to do all the different things, to repair things, to, you know, take care of the yard. Like, I had really no idea. I did chores growing up, but it was like wash the dishes after dinner. It was not like participate as an adult. So with three of us living at home, we had this concept that I should take on a third of the responsibilities. And that was, like, as I discovered what that meant, it was mind-boggling to me. And I did have to move into that gradually because I didn't know how to do some things or what they involved.
Rachel was the kid who didn't want to know anything about cooking. She'd go through the kitchen on the way to somewhere else. Our daughter Valerie loved doing stuff with me. So she learned to cook very early because she loved it. Rachel didn't want to have anything to do with that. Her interests were elsewhere. So even from the same home, different kids can be more or less well prepared for other responsibilities as an adult.
Yeah, the first time I lived in an apartment where I had my own kitchen in college, I called my mom for recipes and she was so shocked.
Okay. Third main point, main tip, is to create and nurture an adult relationship. And this is all straightforward boundary stuff. If you had healthy boundaries with your child as he or she was growing up, this will be much easier.